I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sandspence Radio, Australia's least coherent podcast network.
It's Mike Check! It's Mike Check! The podcast by Mike Myers! And we're clear.
Hello, horny babies. Welcome back to the Mike Check Republic. It's Mike Check, the only podcast in human history that dares to traverse the filmography of one Mike Myers just to check if it's still shagadelic. I am Cameron James, and I'm joined in this quest, as always, by Sir Alexi Toliopoulos.
Oh, Cameron James, my dearest friend, my only comrade in this journey that is going through the entire filmography of Mike Myers just to check if it's still shagadelic, baby. I say hello. After all that, I do say hello to you.
Well, thank God, because for a moment I thought you were going to snub me or turn a blind eye.
No.
Perhaps even, I don't know, fart in my general direction.
Oh my God, I wouldn't dare, dude. I wouldn't dare.
It's been a moment, hasn't it?
It's been a tick. It's been a tick since we last talked about it.
It certainly has. We've been away from the Mike Check Republic for a while. We were forced out into the real world. We were forced at gunpoint to release Finding Drago on the ABC podcast network, to much critical acclaim.
We were and to much personal success and pride. But we learned our investigative skills on this podcast. We learned how to be examiners.
This is where we honed.
We honed
That's
the
exactly
skills.
Right.
We honed them. And guess what, baby? I'm going to make a little joke. We freaking boned them, dude.
We certainly did. Before there was Drago, there was one man. One man with one puddin' face and sleeves that went all the way down to his knuckles, basically. Mike Myers.
The second nub of the knuckle at times, even. They go all the way up.
Now, why have we decided to re-enter the Mike Check Republic?
Well, the Mike Check Republic technically is one of the safest countries in the world right now, and we wanted to get in there, invite you all back as ambassadors. We want to spread a little bit of joy and nothing else. This is joy only.
This is joy only. This is a joy overload as well.
Yes, Bubba, it's a joy overload. We're going to be freaking joying all over the place right now, okay? We're practically teeming with joy right now, okay? We got joy flying out of our respective wazoos. And let me tell you, the wazoo keeper is at home on frickin' quarantine right now. So the wazoo is loose. The animals are running all over the wazoo right now, and they're going absolutely wazoiled. Okay, baby?
It's a crazy time out there in the world, Lex. I don't know if you've popped your head out of your adorable little Blu-ray studio.
I live in a Blu-ray studio. It's like a cubby house.
Yeah, I live inside the Turtle Club at the moment. And
you're seeking shelter within a shell, okay?
Yeah, it's scary out there. There's a lot of lockdowns going on all around the globe. Human beings are being confined to their own spaces. You and I as well, we're both in our own respective home studios right now.
Yes.
So if it does sound a little funny, we apologize for that.
And Cameron, can I just say, we also pray that this does sound a little bit funny to you guys. Okay, we're trying to get laughs here.
That's all we want. I just want at least one yuck a day.
And I pray for about 20 yums per day, dude.
Would you rather get a yuck or a yum?
I love yums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You love
them. So
love
I prefer yums. Them.
You prefer
them? Absolutely. I prefer them. I love them and I prefer them.
But the one place that we've found solace together is here online in the Mic Check Republic, where we are proud to report it is a quarantine-free zone.
Yes, we can cuddle up in here. We've been missing the touch, but the touch can exist online, okay?
Mic Check Republic is the only place that is untouched by COVID-19. It is, however, touched by COVID-69, which is interesting.
And it's interesting. Not that funny, but it's interesting.
It's definitely interesting.
It's a tragically... Yeah, tragically, it's a very similar disease, so you know, we do have to be careful in here still.
But it is exclusively passed on via the beautiful act of putting your mouth on someone's genitals, whilst at the same time, their mouth is on your genitals.
It's a give-take scenario, okay? Someone got it because they touched a monkey, okay?
Don't touch my monkey.
Much like Dieter.
Please don't touch my monkey.
I know. He warned them to not touch the monkey, and then he said, it's a cheeky monkey. He changed character to Tommy Maitland. Very funny. And then they touched the freaking monkey, dude.
It's really crazy, but we love it here. I'm very happy here in the Mic Check Republic. It's quarantine-free, and it's pants optional, and... Yeah. It's horny as frickin' here, I gotta be honest.
Yeah, the only thing that you have to wear in the Mic Check Republic is one item of clothing, okay? And that is a frickin' vintage Austin Powers Spy Who Shagged Me crew member cap. And Bubba, I got a pink one on, and what are you rocking over there?
I'm rocking a daisy yellow over here, and I'm loving every second of it.
And it is beautiful, it is brilliant. It's great to chuck the caps back on. We're littered up for this. We're wearing the classic caps, and they have only increased in value. They are now valued at over $300 a piece, okay? So a good investment for me all these years later, okay? It's a good investment.
Okay,
it's
buddy.
All I've got left in this world, okay?
Investments. Your many investments.
Cameron, it's been a minute since we've done this, obviously, since we've talked about Mike Myers. When we stopped doing regular episodes of this podcast, one of the reasons for that was because we had run out of flicks, movies that starred Mikey.
That's true.
Myers,
well,
that is.
It's almost true. It's we had two left, but
we
were too afraid to dive in.
We were afraid. The movie that we've been discussing today is Terminal, which is a thriller that came out in 2018 starring Mike Myers and hopefully one of his regular collaborators, Margot Robbie, from now on. But I remember when this movie was coming out, it was rumored, we were watching the trailers, we were excited because it seemed so insane that he was doing this freaking movie. They only had one screening in this country, and it was in a state that was not ours, and this was back in the days where we could cross state lines.
Oh, God, remember that. Jeez Louise. It was also back in the days when we didn't have regular jobs, and we couldn't afford to cross state lines on a whim. Which is now, not to brag, but, you know, we have upwards of $69 each. I think we would have sprung for it if it happened now.
They said we will accept one of the caps as exchange for the ticket.
Yep.
And I said, honey, no, I'm waiting it out. They're going to go up in value. I'm not going to trade it off for some rinky-dink flight up to Brisbane, Australia. in Queensland to watch one screening, and they wouldn't even give us a screening. We did ask the film festival that was playing at to fly us out. They believe that it was not a good investment on their part to fly two podcasters to help introduce and premiere the first Mike Myers movie in, what, 10 years?
About that. I think it's been, I think it was about, yeah, eight years or so.
Yeah, 2013 was his film Supermensch that he directed, but yeah. Is not a feature, not a fictional film. I think the last film that he had appeared in was 2009's Inglourious Basterds as an actor.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that special?
It's
and isn't
wild.
That crazy?
It's special. It's crazy. It's a little horny and it's a little bit scary.
I was scared to go into this movie because it had been so long. And it had also been something we'd been praying for a long time to get Mike back on the silver screen, but not in this way.
Yes, we had very very set stipulations about how we wanted Mike to come back.
We wanted him back on his own terms.
On his own terms, his own project. The guy's the freaking Kubrick of comedy, okay? We wanted him to be the auteur of the picture. We wanted him to be the leader. I wanted him to be the leader. We wanted it to be Austin Powers 4. We wanted to write the screenplay. We wanted it to be our project. We wanted to be involved. Those were our stipulations.
Sadly,
and they were not met.
None of those were met. What we did get, though, was a film called Terminal, starring Margot Robbie and Simon Pegg.
Dexter Fletcher.
And two dudes from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mike Myers in a small role. That's what we were given. And I got to say, and it feels bad to say it, but we avoided it.
We avoided it, but also we didn't have the time. We got hired by the ABC to make a tremendous project that we're still proud of, but it was too hard for us to sit down in a room together and watch a freaking movie, okay? We were saving this movie to watch together, and we only broke this oath to each other because the government, once again, left us no choice.
That's right. The government forced us to watch movies individually. That's Scott Morrison got on TV, and he said, no one is to watch a movie with a friend anymore.
Exactly. And if this podcast has always been political, every time we've come back, it has been during an election or a political crisis. And right now, we've got a health crisis and a political crisis. So it only seemed right to bring this back and once again, try and do our best to, this time, elect a progressive leader to the Australian people. Now, Mike, Czech Republic is progressive. It's a republic, but we need to, and it is tyrannically ruled by two people, but we are who believe in a god, which is Mike Myers, but we are in the Mike Czech Republic. We're going to be talking about Terminal, but before we do that, Cameron, I got something to tell you.
What's that?
I have been on the computer.
Okay, that's cool.
Yes, it's one of my most exciting things that I could do during the day, and what I did was I searched for something. And let me tell you, baby, I got some breaking Myers news!
Oh my god, my favorite segment. I forgot all about this. It's Brecken Meyer news, my absolute favorite part of the show, which is where I give a little update on the actor Brecken Meyer, who you all know from Road Trip, Rat Race, Robot Chicken.
The movie 54 that he starred alongside Mike Myers with.
And I do have some Brecken Meyer news for you. Thank you for reminding me, Lexi.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I will hear the Brecken Meyer news. I will sit by this. But I do have some breaking Myers news to break out to the people of the Mike Czech Republic. They've been hanging on. They haven't had an update for a long time.
I have no idea what you're talking about. All I know is that it's Brecken's time to shine. And let's get him out there in the sunlight and let that beautiful Texan olive skin reflect the sun and look beautiful.
Can I ask one of the stories? Does it say that Brecken Meyer is Texan?
No,
he's Texas' favorite son.
I was just assuming.
Oh, okay.
Do you think he is?
Yeah, I absolutely do not think Brecken Meyer is Texan. I'm willing to bet that Brecken Meyer ain't Texan.
Do you reckon he's a New Yorker? Born and bred.
I reckon he's Canadian or something, like every comedian that we worship.
Buddy, I got news for you.
Get out.
The guy was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but he was raised in Texas.
Get the fuck out. Now, this actually is Brecken Wire news. This is truly, we're the first people to have ever let this out into the media that Brecken Wire was raised in Texas, okay?
Here's another little bit of Brecken Wire news that I've just, this is the first time I've ever been on his Wikipedia page.
Oh my God, can I just... I'm like flabbergasted right now because right now I can't believe that you thought that you intuited that he was Texan. I honestly think I'm on a conference call with the world's smartest man right now. That's what I feel like. I'm in awe of you.
You will never get this. This would never have crossed your mind and probably never would have crossed mine either. But
yeah,
here's a fact.
Can
on
you
his...
say, just take that line again of you'll never get this, but say it like Borat in the movie Borat when he's talking about how his sister would taunt his brother within a cage saying, sure, you will sure, never sure, get sure. this. So just do another take for me there.
You'll never get this. You will never get this. Ha ha ha. This is
yeah, good stuff. That's
this is
awesome.
Something that you would never have guessed in a million years, and neither would have I. But this is on his Wikipedia page. It's the last line of his early life section on wikipedia.org/wiki/Brecken_Meyer.
That's the official website for Brecken Meyer's Wikipedia.
The final line of early life is. Actually, I'll give you the line before it so you get a full context of how bizarre it is. Okay. Meyer attended elementary school with Drew Barrymore and also attended Beverly Hills High School in LA. As a little boy, he was mostly seen in television advertisements and also appeared as a child participant in the game show Child's Play, full stop. And then the final sentence is, he also slept in a closed coffin for several years in high school.
What the hell? What? Brecken, is this true, Brecken? You slept in an open casket?
Well, there's a citation there, and apparently it's from an interview on Conan from 2014.
Oh, my God. Brecken, you're a freak, man.
Yeah, dude. Freakin' Meyer, more like.
Yeah, Brecken Meyer.
Brecken Meyer, dude.
All right, that's Brecken Meyer's news. Now let's get to Breaking Meyer's news! So, okay, I did two things for this, Cameron. I reached out to an acquaintance of ours who I know has some communication with Netflix, because where we last left you guys was that Mike Myers was in development, producing and starring and writing and creating a Netflix series, a 6-part series where he would be playing multiple characters, a comedy of some sorts. And I wanted to see if there were any updates with that because we hadn't heard about it since roughly this time last year when we last went into the Mike Czech Republic. There had not been any news. I was wondering because all Netflix shows have been suspended due to the coronavirus outbreak, the pandemic, if there was any news. I couldn't find freaking none. Okay? I couldn't find one freaking news, okay, about this shit. I tried so hard. I'd become an investigative journalist in the last year since we did this. And let me tell you, still no freaking news. But I did something else instead. I went onto google.com, searched Mike Myers' names, hit the news tab, and there is a new story for you right now.
What?
Yes. Here is the latest headline. This is from showbizcheatsheet.net. And the headline is, what is Mike Myers' net worth and how did he become famous?
Okay.
And I was like, well, you know, I can send you away to a primary resource that could tell you everything. But this is what they say about that. Mike Myers is a comedy legend who's known for portraying iconic characters like Dr. Evil and Shrek. But the actor, producer, director, and screenwriter has a dynamic resume that spans over 30 years. So what is Mike Myers' net worth and how did he become famous? And the answer, would you believe, is that he appeared in TV shows and movies. I'll summarize it to you there, that he had the points are how Mike Myers became famous. I talk about how he was on SNL and yada, yada, yada. And then the next headline is he had a successful film career. And then finally, what is Mike Myers' net worth? Now, this is the nice little nut of the article. And if I'm anything, I'm a little squirrel for that nut. I love to nut. With an illustrious TV and film career under his belt, Myers has racked up a notable wealth. According to Celebrity Net Worth, as of 2020, the 56-year-old comedian is worth $175 million.
Jeez, that's pretty significant chunk of change right there.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big nut, dude.
That's a huge nut, and I've seen a few big nuts on my screen in my time.
Yeah, I've looked up pictures of bignuts.com, and let me tell you, not any of them are that big.
That's one of the biggest nuts I've ever even dreamt of.
Yeah, and you've dreamt of some big-ass nuts, dude. So, yeah, we know Mike Myers is rich. Mike, if you're listening to this, you know the performing arts here in Australia could use a little bit of chunk of change or that.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Just one of those millions would be really good, you know?
Send us a few shekels and then maybe, you know, send us a couple of yucks as well.
Mike, could you send us a couple of shrekels, which is the currency here in the Mike Jack Republic? We'd pay for everything with shrekels, okay?
Oh, my God. Shall we dive into Terminal?
Bubba, I'm dying to.
That was me pressing pause on the podcast to take a little moment to plug Generation Batuta, a new podcast brought to you by the Batuta Advocate, only available now on Spotify.
Generation Batuta is a half-hour news segment on the country's premier station, Desert Rock FM. The show is hosted by Louis Burke, who fearlessly brings the truth to the most often forgotten Australian demographic, the youth.
Covering the most important issues in the nation, pill testing, sniffer dogs and weird sex stuff to make sure you listen until the end. Generation Batuta also keeps you up to date with national and world news, as well as the incidents that are isolated to Batuta.
The show often features investigative reports, social issues and discussion via the text line, as well as interviews with interesting people, experts and politicians, before topping it all off with ripping tune banger from the most erect new artists.
It's all presented by Louis Berg, the questionably older voice of the youth, who is joined by social justice reporter Katrina Sacamonto and youth gonzo journalist at Evan97, who risk life, limb and clout to bring you the stories that matter to you and the other five members of your sharehouse.
Plus with a controversial mayor, racist cooking show and deforestation that is endangering dozens of native bush dwarfs. It goes without saying there's a lot to unpack, but Louis and the Generation Batuta team will be able to do it with the open ears of the woke youth and the open mouth of entitled, privately educated adults.
It's funny, dude. Check it out, or just honestly go to heck. What do you think of that?
I think that sounds great. I can't wait for it. Let's have a little listen to of what it sounds like right now.
G'day, listeners. Louis Burke here with Generation Batuta, the stories that matter to you and the other five members of your share house. Open your ears and blow your minds as our weekly youth program brings you stories about pill testing, climate change, and a cheeky story about sex to make sure you listen until the end. I am. You are. We are. Generation Batuta. Generation Batuta. Tune in now on Desert Rock FM, or if you don't live in Batuta, listen free, only on Spotify.
Man, I'm so excited for this podcast. I think the Batuta Advocate guys do so much exciting stuff with Australian comedy right now. It's so the cutting edge of what feels like Australian comedy's been building up to. It's beautiful satire. And not only that, I know that my dearest friend, Cameron James, is on this freaking podcast.
I mean, I do a couple of voices for it. They...
You're the star, you
I'm
told me.
I'm not the star. I
You've
never said I was the
for
star.
Months that I'm the star of this show.
I said I do two voices in the fucking thing. Look,
you said, sit down, I'm about to tell you something amazing. I'm the star of this new podcast. I go, okay, what is it?
I love Batuta. I love those guys. They make me laugh every day. I'm jealous of them because they write better satire than I do most of the time. And that pisses me off because
Your job is
my job is
satire.
To write satire. So I love Batuta Advocate, and you guys are going to love Generation Batuta. Listen to it on Spotify. It's funny as fuck.
It's funny, it's sexy, it's cool, and baby, that's what I like about it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Why don't you piss off, old man? Mind your own business.
Supervisor. Night supervisor. Duties to include sweeping of concourse and platform, maintenance and attendance of all...
Shut up! Tell me something. Do I look to you like the sort of individual that creeps into the station in the dead of night, breaks open a locker, removes a suspicious-looking briefcase, and then lets the cleaner... Sorry, night supervisor. Run off and tell two tales about it. Do I not strike you more as the sort of highly motivated, highly vicious individual that would not kill said night supervisor and stuff him in the locker?
Acceptable forms of payment at the terminal are as follows. Cash, banker's drafts, certified checks, up to the value of the return journey.
I like you. You're funny. All right, okay.
Oh.
Mum's the word, Sue.
Oh,
yeah. 10, 20, 30. All right, son.
When rich villains have need of poor ones make what price they will.
Come again?
I want more money.
Terminal from 2018 is directed by Vaughn Steen. This guy doesn't even have one first name, dude. His name's Vaughn Steen.
Oh, God. All right, tell me more about it.
Okay. Revenge never looked so good. That's the tagline. Talking about Mike, I presume. In the dark heart of a sprawling anonymous city, two assassins carry out a sinister mission. A teacher battles a fatal illness, and an enigmatic janitor and a curious waitress lead dangerous double lives. Murderous consequences unravel in the dead of night as their lives intertwine at the hands of a mysterious criminal mastermind who is hell-bent on revenge.
Spooky stuff.
So this is a plot synopsis unlike any other Mike Myers movie.
Yeah, unless, you know, the janitor was Austin Powers or something. Like, it's not too far removed from, like, a spy thriller kind of thing.
Yes.
But this is not funny. This is not a funny movie. This movie is played for serious.
It's played for serious right now, okay, dude? This is a serious movie. It's one of the most serious films ever made.
This movie
that stars Mike Myers.
Well, for starters, I don't even know if I can call it a movie. I think it's a film.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, man.
Are you straight up saying this is a film?
Well, I mean, you got to look at what you've got there. You've got dark shadows. Mm-hmm. You've got...
Not to be confused with the collaboration between Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, Dark Shadows.
I would also say that's a film.
Yeah, of course. It's one of the most famous films ever made.
Because it's got dark shadows in it.
Yeah.
You've got crazy twists.
Mm-hmm.
You've got...
Insane turns.
You've got references to classic literature.
Yes, you've got something that
plays.
Tim Burton absolutely loves. It's got freaking Alice in Wonderland flying out of the wazoo right now.
So this movie officially, I think you have to say, is a film. But I will say it is a shit film.
And I would say, I don't know, I just would say it's not my cup of tea. You know?
Yeah, but we all know that you like your cup of tea to be a little bit nutty.
Yes, I do like my tea nutty, okay? I love to put a nut in my tea.
I love to slurp it up. I love it to be in and around my mouth to leave a mark. And then I love to describe it as, it's a bit nutty.
Yeah. That's your favorite way of having tea. Now, let me just say that, look, I feel bad for saying it's a shit film.
Mm.
It's not shit. It's just so fucking self-important.
And it's really strange. Like, this is such a weird departure that Mike Myers, who has not appeared in a film since, as a lead, since The Love Guru.
Yeah.
And we know how that turned out. The best movie ever made.
Best movie in the last 20 years.
Yeah, last 20 years, best movie, better than Austin, better than Wayne's World, all of that shit. It makes those films look like good movies, whereas this is a masterpiece. But, you know, we had been tracking for a long time what Mike's next move was, what we hoped it would be, what we predicted it would be. And I remember after we went through Inglourious Basterds, we both thought, I think this was more a Cameron thing, though, was like, you would like to see him appear as a character actor in some roles.
Yeah. And you know what? We were given exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
In the same year, 2018, I think we got Terminal and Bo Rap.
Yeah.
Two character actor performances that seem good on paper.
Yes.
And he's good. I'll say this. He was the standout of this film for me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time he was on screen, I was happy, I was elated, I was excited.
Yes. But you're feeling the emotions that you had not felt in a long time.
Yeah, like 10 years, basically.
Exactly.
But like, the rest of the movie is, it's like, I can't even describe it. Like, it's beyond batshit insane.
It's more like Batman and Robin rather than batshit insane. Like, this looks like a Joel Schumacher Batman movie with these bright colors, these neon lights, just trying to do like this neon noir thing. It's a little bit Sin City. It's a little bit Smoke and Aces, dude.
And more Smoke and Aces than Sin City. It's more Seven Psychopaths than in Bruges.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like Only God Forgives than Drive, I think. And you know, there are parts of it that look very cool and very stylish, but it's so much. It's like it never fucking lets up, the style. It's like you're watching a bunch of university projects in a row. Like there's no substance. It's just style.
Yeah, truly. It reminds me of, do you remember Zack Snyder made this film probably 10 years ago called Sucker Punch?
Yeah.
It's got that same kind of thing where it's like, it's all fantasy, it's all a dream, it could be anything. It's got this idea, like that Samuel Beckett shit, like how Samuel Beckett, all his stuff, like from Waiting for Godot to Endgame and all of those things. It's set in kind of like this imagined dystopian world where there's characters that are not, let me just tell, I don't know how else to say it. There's characters that are just delivering dialogue. Like it's
They're not like, people. They're not ideas. People. They're tropes. They're like there's two hitmen that are stuck in a house together waiting to do a job that's literally ripped from The Dumb Waiter. And the whole point of them is to deliver this kind of Martin McDonagh, Quentin Tarantino light, like back and forth.
Yeah.
And then you've got the waitress, played by Margot Robbie, whose whole purpose is to be this kind of elusive Alice in Wonderland, mysterious, sexy character.
Yeah.
And then, Simon Pegg. A depressed teacher is the one who just quotes Shakespeare all the time and gives you all the literary references.
Yeah.
And then Mike plays the janitor.
Yes.
Who is like the, who would he be in this kind of fable? He's like the...
the white hare. Rabbit, the hare, something like that.
Maybe the Mad Hatter as well. Like he's this kind of crazy Greek chorus almost, who seems to know everything that's going on as he just limps around this underground railway station, interacting with everybody and you know, he seems to know them all and seems to be like a puppeteer behind a lot of it. It's a good performance.
It's good. It's nice to see him as well doing this because basically this is like a very highly stylized, high tension in a way, like weird stylistic thriller. And he is doing a Mike Myers performance in it. Like everyone else is doing a take on like a noir character. Like you've got Margot Robbie being the femme fatale. Everyone else has kind of got that really noir, intriguing, slowly spilling out style of stylized dialogue. And then Mike Myers is full on doing like Fat Bastard, doing Austin Powers. He's playing like this little weird, janitor who's got some magic realism about him like everyone else. He's got a little bit of a limp, a little skip in his step. He's often scared. He's a low status character.
It's a full on mic performance. Like it's the kind of character that...
Mm-hmm.
It's not too far removed from things he's done in his own comedies, really. Like, it could be a bizarre character in the Austin Powers universe. This janitor who's kind of like a bit mystical and magical, who's cleaning up crime scenes and stuff. Yeah. You know, it doesn't feel like it's out of step for Mike, but it does have a pretty huge twist.
Yes. There's nothing like this. Before we get to the twist, maybe we'll talk a little bit about this movie a little bit more, and then we can get to the twist. Because I don't know if anyone will watch this movie.
I don't think anyone will. I don't think anyone did. It's like, you know, I don't want to shit on something for trying to be different. Because to be fair, it is pretty different to like all the other movies that came out in the last couple of years. The only problem is, just because something's different doesn't mean it's good. Like, it's trying to be its own thing, and I respect that. But like, I'd rather just watch a better movie.
A little late. I would say that this is a little late in the game. If this was coming out 10 years ago or 15 years ago if you're smoking Aces and stuff like that, I feel like now it's like they would have to be doing something really wild and different or nail the screenplay and story in this. This is the debut film of Vaughn Steen. I don't want to go too hard on him because I think he shows promise with this. I think he shows promise with this. This was also the producing debut of Margot Robbie, who in the couple of years since this came out has gone on to become, I would say, one of the great actor producers who has gone on to become a fantastic actor producer. Much like a Mike Myers or a Tom Cruise, someone who's a lead of the project and becomes the auteur of that project and allows auteurs to jump on and do their thing with it. Much like Tom Cruise would do with like Mission Impossible and stuff. This was her first one. The next one that she did was I, Tonya. I, Tonya, I like the movie. I, Tonya, I love ya. I'm trying to get the DVD cover for the next...
I, Tonya, I'm fond of you.
Oh, God, you did a better one.
I, Tonya, I watched you on a plane.
Okay. It's a great plane movie, but I saw it in the cinema, and it was a great cinematic experience, too. Okay?
Yeah, I think I, Tonya, is way better than this movie. It's a huge step up. Like, I don't want to shit on Vaughn Steen. Vaughn, you know, you're lacking in a first name, but what you lack in a first name, you make up for in cojones.
You've got huge, big-ass nuts, Vaughn.
You've got huge nuts. These nuts are huge.
These nuts are tremendously large. They're some of the biggest nuts I've seen offline.
These nuts are outrageous in stature, size, and girth. And it's all out there on the screen, man. You've got Simon Pegg doing something different. You've got Dexter Fletcher ripping it up and schlipping it up.
And he's making us laugh, dude. You've got huge cojones, bigger than ones I've seen on the internet, bigger than the ones I've seen IRL Stein.
Is that your new character?
Yes, IRL Stein, okay? It's like, what if Goosebumps was real life,
Goosebumps
okay? And that's
real,
what this
though.
Movie kind of is. Goosebumps gets real.
Yeah, this movie... Oh, God. Okay, yeah. So, I don't want to shit on him too much. He's done an okay job. But I will just say that why watch... Why would you watch Terminal when you already have In Bruges and when you already have, like, the films of Nicholas Vindig Refn and Wong Kar-wai and stuff? Like, it's riffing on these things that are too recent, in my opinion.
Can I tell you and maybe offer you an answer to why you would watch this?
Yeah.
It's got freaking Mike Myers in it.
That's the only reason we watched it.
Do you think that... Okay. Theoretically, hypothetical scenario, okay? Margot Robbie is a producer. She's trying to get her first project as a producer off the ground. She wants a low-stakes star vehicle for her. She wants to birth new talent. So what is she doing? She's like, okay, this sounds interesting. She would have probably seen, like, the script and some test reel footage from Vaughn Steen, also wanting to make his debut as a director. He'd been second unit director and assistant director on movies like Beauty and the Beast, Dad's Army, The Danish Girl, Elementary, stuff like that. And she gets him. They're trying to cast this freaking movie. I am going to put two things to you, okay? Margot Robbie is Australian. Do you think Margot Robbie could be a member of the Mike Czech Republic? And she's listening to this, or she's aware of it. A friend of hers is listening to it or something. And she's like, wow, Mike Myers, getting in her head that way. Mike Myers, got to get this guy on board. That's option one. Option B, my other idea, is Margot Robbie is Australian. She's the same age as we are, roughly. She's a bit older than me. She's about your age. I'm younger than you and Margot Robbie. I'm a bub, basically. I've got my whole life ahead of me, I hope, and, like, lots of exciting opportunities coming ahead. I've been, like, basically a prodigy my whole life and stuff like that. Anyway, so I'm getting off track. Let me get back on board.
You're in love with yourself.
I'm Vanity Smurf, my hero.
You are a freaking Narcissus himself.
I'm Narcissus, dude, and I love looking into the pool. And the other option is she's Australian, she's roughly our age. I posit to you that she could also have the same love and fascination with Mike Myers, because she would have been receiving the same media of Mike Myers the same way that we did at the same time.
You know what? I think you might be onto something there. I think it's a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
That while the older generation had looked over Mike and said, he's done, he's washed up, he's a has-been, he's got a puddin' face, his haircut sucks, he buys his clothes off the rack.
Off the rack and too long, he doesn't tailor them in. The guy has $175 million in the bank and he's not tailoring his clothes.
And then there's guys like us, there's guys like Margot, who go, no, he's a genius and he will have his day of renaissance, and we got a touch of it.
And I'm going to bring it to him.
We got a touch of it with Tommy Maitland, but not quite enough. And maybe she said, yeah, we're going to give it to him. Let's give him a role that is so good that he cannot refuse. And that role turned out to be the fat, squat, little limping janitor who whistles Danny Boy in Terminal.
Yeah.
A movie that no one has heard of.
No one has heard of. But let me tell you, I bought the Blu-ray of this like 2 years ago almost. I bought the Blu-ray of it. It's here. I'm showing it to you over the camera. There it is. It's got special features on there. I watched them all. The cast of Terminal, building the world of Terminal, and from concept to creation. So I watched the cast talk about this movie. Margot Robbie, when it came time to start discussing Mike Myers in this, she said, and I quote, "It was mind-boggling working with Mike." She, like, absolutely loved him. She loved him. She was such a fan of him. She said it was mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling.
It sounds like she was starstruck by Mike Myers.
My God, that's crazy. Did they shed any insight on how he got cast in the movie?
He said that he wanted to do the movie. Mike says he did this movie because of the twists and turns. It feels like a dream, and it appealed to him as a genre study. And that checks out, baby. The Mike check tick is coming up on this one. I'm checking it. It's Mike, because if we know anything about Mike Myers, the guy absolutely the funny cunny loves genre.
Loves genre.
He loves it. You know, we look at Austin Powers. It's a genre pastiche.
Yes.
We look at Wayne's World. It's a homage to rock and roll music, a genre of music Mike like.
We look at Love Guru. It's a brown face genre.
Yes, it's his homage to the party. Peter Sellers, his hero, when he did fucked up shit like that. And he did. Mike didn't do brown face. He played a white guy in the movie. Okay?
I know. I've seen it. He's the only white guy. He has got beautiful auburn chestnut hair. His face is veering towards pudding at this point, but it's not full pud.
Not full pud. Okay, he doesn't have the pud haircut going on, I guess. But I would say that this checks out, that this is why Mike would want to do this, to apply his skills to genre once again.
Let's talk about the twist. This is the this is a dance move that started in the 1960s, I believe.
Yeah, maybe late 1950s they were doing the twist, just like
late 1950s, early 1960s, when surf music and rhythm and blues really came into its own, and teenagers would swivel their hips to and fro, and the men would get absolutely rock hard in their pants, and the women...
The men were much like the most popular star of their era. They were Rock Hudson, dude.
They were Rock Hudson, and the women, they weren't too... You know, they had a few things going on down there as well.
Yes, we won't say. It's not for us to say.
But if you Google what happens to women when they get aroused, you will learn a thing or two, and you'll get a bit of an idea about what was going on inside those hoop skirts in the 1950s.
So Google that. That's the phrase you can look up. Look up what happens beneath those hoop skirts in the 1950s when the twist is going on. And you might get a better idea, for vision's sake, of what we are freaking talking about right now. It's not for us to say. It's a little bit too prudy, blue for us to talk about, you know. We're prudes. We're prude dudes.
Yeah, we're prude.
We don't talk
dudes.
About that kind of stuff. But we will talk about the big stiffies the fellas had. And the fellas had some Rock Hudson stiffies in this era. They were strong, they were proud, they were stiff, and they were mighty. And those fellas love seeing those ladies do the twist. And that is where the term comes from, because it's something, the twist seems innocent enough, but it elicits something that is unexpected, which is a stiff penis and whatever is happening underneath those hoop skirts.
I think I know, because I've Googled it just now, and it's really exciting stuff. It's not as funny as a stiffy.
It's not funny, but it's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
But it's not for us to say. It's not our business. That's lady business. We only deal with men business, okay?
Yep. But let's talk less about the dance move, even though I could talk about it for another hour.
For another 68 minutes or something. Yeah. Minimum.
But let's talk about the other twist in this film, the twist that Mike was drawn to, which is that his character, the janitor, is secretly the criminal mastermind behind it all.
Yes, he has been the one pulling the strings, okay? We're used to him pulling the pud, but not the strings. He has been the Machiavellian mastermind, the Don Vito Corleone of it all, the puppet master, just like the title cover of The Godfather on DVD. Just above that title, there is a little hand, a little cartoon of a hand with a little marionette puppet string, okay?
Yeah, that's my favorite cartoon.
Yeah, it's that little hand with the little strings.
Yeah, that's kind of what this character is. He is... he's a man who I believe runs a network of hitmen who are sent out to do crimes. And then he sends the janitor to clean it up, but the janitor is himself, so
he likes cleaning it.
No one expects that he would be the man in charge. And there's a moment in this movie, very Usual Suspects-y, where the janitor enters a room and his limp disappears, and then he straightens up his posture, and then he removes his grubby uniform and these fucked up teeth and prosthetics and stuff from his face, and then he slicks his hair back, and he looks actually quite dapper and cool.
Yeah. He's got a little turtleneck on, and this guy's neck is turtly enough for the Turtle Club. Mike looks stunning. To see Mike in El Natural, when was the last time you saw El Natural Mike on screen like this?
Oh, God, it's been such a long time. I mean, to be fair, his hair is like platinum blonde.
Stunning.
Do you think that worked for him?
He looks like Andy Warhol.
Yeah, he does look cool.
He looks like a pudding-faced Andy Warhol, and I love it.
He looks great. He carries himself well. His accent changes from, "Hello, governor, what's going on down there? I'm the janitor," to, "Well, hello there. I'm, of course, Mr. Farnsworth, and I'm the criminal mastermind behind it all." Mm. It's classic Mike. If I may be so bold, this moment, this turn, this twist is the Mike's touch.
Oh, baby, I think I got to agree with you. These final 20 minutes are freaking insane. They're crazy stuff. And it's so enjoyable because I think this is when the movie just finally accepts, like, oh, we're amping it up. This is like a really crazy, silly, this is a really crazy, silly take on genre. And now we're just embracing it. Margot Robbie's revealed that she's been twins the whole time. And Mike's like, twins, Basil?
He goes, Mike's... like, his glasses go askew, and he goes a little bit cross-eyed, and he goes, twins, twins, twins. It's really sexy.
Oh, he's like, fuck me, fuck you, twins?
So I love that, like, the last 20 minutes,
I also just say, we're on FaceTime right now with each other, and Cameron did a beautiful 100% accurate act out of Mike Myers exasperated when he saw twins. It was it was a perfect screen recreation. He committed to it, and it was the best shit I've ever seen.
Well, just because we're in ISO doesn't mean we can't be rocking out and doing act outs for our buddies.
Yeah. Just because we're in ISO doesn't mean that we can't IO, Improv Olympic. It's a comedy club where they teach you how to do improv.
That's true. Del Close, the guru. So I love this final 20 minutes because it's every like 30 seconds there's a new twist.
Yeah.
And it's like stuff that they could have saved for a sequel. Like,
yes.
If they were trying to build a world here that we'd want to revisit, I feel like... There's about 10 twists in the end that are all things that would have been perfectly fine to save for a sequel.
So the twist number one, you find out that Mike has been the Machiavellian puppet master bad guy. Twist number two, and also, to be honest, we were already predisposed to believe that because there's all these phone conversations with that character. And I know Mike's pattern of speech instantly. Even though they've got like voice modulation on it and stuff like that, I go, that's Mike Myers' voice. I know. I know the way that he talks. I can hear the pattern in his voice. I can hear the way he's pausing, the way he hangs on certain words. I know the guy's voice like the back of my hand, which is not a comparative medium, but I know it. So I knew that. Then you find out Margot Robbie is twins.
Twins, Basil. And twins.
You're sitting at home. When there's two of them on screen, you have a reaction that's just like this.
For everyone at home right now, Alexi over FaceTime just did an absolutely spot on, like, act out of Austin Powers being like so horny and breathless about something that he wasn't expecting to see.
Yeah, it's the only reaction you can have to finding out that hot chicks can be twins.
Yeah. And then I reckon less than 20 seconds after that twist, which should be the end of the movie.
Yeah. And but also like why are they twins? Hasn't mattered to me that they're two people at all.
You know what? I think it's because there's moments where one character is talking to her in the cafe, while at the same time another character is talking to her at the strip club. Oh. So you're supposed to assume that it's time jumps or something, or she's a bit magical, but really it's just because there's two of her. Whoop-dee-doo, Basil. Whoop-dee-doo.
Whoop-dee-doo, bitch. I think that this doesn't work. I didn't care because this is a fantasy world. Like, if this was just set in London, like, if this wasn't some weird, anonymous, purgatory-like city, like, this is in every play where it's like, oh, they're actually in purgatory. Like, this is a fucking Christopher Moltisanti nightmare or something like this.
Yeah, the whole thing is a fucking Sopranos nightmare. It's, like, exhausting how much of purgatory it is. Even when there's a part where Simon Pegg's waiting for a train, and the janitor's like, "What train are you waiting for, Governor?" And Simon Pegg goes, "It doesn't matter, just any train." And you're like, "Ugh, okay, all right." So he's like, "Okay, in limbo, dude. We get it. Fuck off."
There's some fuck off limbo bullshit. But then, or the rest of the then this movie goes, "No, it's actually real." Okay, Simon Pegg was a molester, a high school teacher molester. It's like, okay, they have high schools in this world. I guess it can't be hell.
Let me maybe tell it's you heaven. that twist. was one of the more upsetting things that I've seen on a film in a long time. Like, it was up there for me with the tunnel scene in Irreversible. It was like, I was traumatized by the idea of Simon Pegg being a rapist.
Yeah. It's not good.
And a pedophile rapist.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't need that in my life. And I don't think the movie needed it either. It just felt gratuitous and gross. And I was like, come on, man. It's fucking Shaun of the Dead. You're going to make him play a pedophile rapist in your movie?
I think that's why it reminded me of Sucker Punch, because that has all that grubby stuff in it as well. Where she's like in a mental institution, she's about to be lobotomized. She's had all this sad shit in her life, creepy, leery dudes. That whole movie feels creepy and leery, whereas this movie doesn't feel like that at all, which is pleasant when comparing these two shit movies.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like there's any consequence to anything. And it's just like weird to kind of bring this reality to it at this point late in the game.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like the whole thing with the last Star Wars movie where, you know, you find out that Rey is related to the Emperor, and then that forces you to reckon with the image of the Emperor getting a freaking stiff knob.
Yeah.
And poking it under a hoop skirt, I guess.
Yeah, and then from there it's not our business to say from there. We have no idea. We have no idea why they decided the emperor has to be. You have to have the image of the emperor slapping it raw dog style. Okay, don't know why they did that. But then there's another twist.
And this movie does that with Simon Pegg, where it's like this guy's not even a real person. He's just a guy who quotes literature and talks about nihilism, and then.
So he's
all
cool.
Of a sudden,
we thought he's cool this whole time because he talks
about
stuff.
Yeah, we thought
he
was cool.
Cool guy
Simon
stuff.
Pegg. And then all of a sudden we find out he's a pedophile and a rapist and he dies. Then you find out the janitor's the mastermind. Then you find out that Margot Robbie is actually twins, Basil. And then 20 seconds later you find out that also Mike Myers is her dad.
Yes, Mike Myers is her dad who had sex with her mum, and then she found out he was a gangster and left the family and stuff like that.
And so he killed the mum in a fire. And the two daughters escaped, two twin daughters, who then went to a orphanage where they were raped by Simon Pegg, and then grew up to be a hitman team with the sole purpose of killing Mike Myers. But they don't kill him. They lobotomize him. Puncture his brain and then send him to Neverland, or no, Wonderland. Which is, I guess, just like a mental institution. It was all too much for me. It was all unraveling at this speed of like twist after twist after twist after like bullshit fake out reveals. It reminded me, the only thing I can compare it to, and even stylistically this works, is the last like half hour of the movie Cats, where...
Your favorite film.
My favorite film, where it's just like... overwhelming visual and story nonsense. Nothing makes sense, but there's all this mythology unfolding in front of you, and it's just, it was too much. I couldn't.
The look of this movie is very much like Cats.
Very
as
much
well,
like Cats.
Where it's like, it almost like this bigger constructed set world, and there's lots of that bright neon light stuff, lots of posters of fake shit up everywhere. It's like, could be, this could be the, like, they look down. This movie could be set in the same world where they look down and they've got these weird anthropomorphic cats the size of their knees. That could be what this movie is. That these people look down, they've got cats that are walking around on their hind legs, on their knees, dancing and slinking about. And then the size of their hand, they've got freaking cockroaches.
Disgusting.
Mike Myers and Rebel Wilson could have been in this movie together.
Exactly, dude.
Oh my God. Okay, replace Margot for another Aussie superstar with Rebel.
Oh,
better movie? Do you think to make this a comedy is better?
To make it a comedy, yeah, but I think it's a worse movie.
To have Rebel Wilson in
it. I wouldn't watch that fucking movie at all.
No, even if it had Mike Myers in it, I still wouldn't watch it.
Like, let's be honest, the main reason that this movie exists is because Margot Robbie is, obviously she's a great actor, but she's, like, beautiful.
Mm.
The whole character is built around her being beautiful and her being able to seduce people. Yeah. And the tagline is, revenge never looked so good. Like, it's all about Margot and the way she looks. Everyone else is disgusting in this world. There's a fucking big plot twist where you find out that the two hitmen who've been waiting for their order for like the hit they're about to do, the twist is that they actually were waiting to kill each other, which is ripped off directly from The Dumb Waiter, which was a play that I studied in high school.
Is Martin McDonagh?
No, it's not McDonagh, but McDonagh ripped that off for In Bruges. In Bruges basically has the same plot. It's just constantly referencing things that already exist and doing it in a way that we've already seen done better. And then everyone's disgusting. Everyone's like vile and gross. Even Margot Robbie, who's the hero, is like irredeemable and disgusting in this movie.
Yeah. There's no real, you know, I'm watching this movie and go, what's the point, Vanessa?
Yeah.
You know, I think the point would be, like you said, this is a fairly easy go dry run for Margot Robbie to make, to produce a film as a lead and producer, to put her stamp on it. Low stakes, dry run, small movie, tiny, tiny release. It was barely released anywhere. Also, you know, she can work with some actors that she likes, like Dexter Fletcher, great actor. Who wouldn't want to work with him?
Yeah, he's a real highlight of this movie. He's really great.
And then, you know, I think Margot's got the same taste in comedy as us because she's the same age from the same part of the world. So she's like Mike Myers, Simon Pegg. I want to work with these two funny guys that I like.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason they are cast in this movie. It's by a young director with some promise who has worked in the industry for some years as an AD, as a second unit guy. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. She's giving someone a hand up. That's a good thing to do as an early producer credit, to just give someone a leg up. You know, hopefully you're breaking new talent. And then it's in line with what she has done since. Like, I, Tonya is, you know, it's a Goodfellas riff. And this is like a crime riff. Then she does Birds of Prey as a producer, which is very much sits in that world as well, where it feels like Birds of Prey feels like freaking if Scott Pilgrim versus the World had a gangster movie set in it. And I really enjoyed Birds of Prey. So I think Margot Robbie is like a superstar producer of the future, like truly superstar producer of the future. And I think that this film is, it's just like we're checking it and it's okay, but it's barely exists. Like, this is, of all the things we've ever done, I'm going to check it. I'm going to say it's good, but it barely exists.
I'm going to check it and say it's interesting, and I think that there's some moments in it that are quite, like, ballsy, as we've already said. Vaughn Stein, Margot Robbie, you all got huge-ass nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's, like, I would never watch it again.
Yeah, I own it on Blu-ray, so I guess I'll try and chuck it on sometime.
I have a question to ask you before we wrap this up.
Yes.
Please don't get offended by it. Don't take it the wrong way. But
I promise I won't. I'm going to take it with an open heart, open mind, and open ass. Lay it to me.
Did this film at any point make you horny?
Cameron, I will answer this. I would tell you that it made me tingly, baby, I would say. It edged me onto making me horny. It got me very close because it delivered things that I want. It made me... I saw a new movie with Mike Myers as a supporting character. Mike Myers also technically plays dual multiple roles in this shit, doing multiple voices, multiple performances, different characterizations for these two different personalities of this character for seemingly no reason. Like, why is he playing the janitor? Why is this guy pretending to be the janitor? No reason for it, apart from to delight me that Mike Myers gets to go, at 6 p.m. the train is going to come in here. Oh, hello, Sergeant, and stuff like that, and doing very much a classic Mike Myers, stressed out, insane character performance. I think this is almost like Philip the Hyper Hyper's dad or something, what he's doing. Like, if Tommy Maitland was Simon, the bath boy's dad, I would say that the janitor is Philip the Hyper Hypo's dad. Because it's like a strange, weird little man. And then it's, from then, it's getting me excited. Because I'm like seeing these little Micah's touches. I'm seeing these little images coming at me that have Mike on it. At 24 frames per second, I'm getting Mike. And that's all I can want. Usually that's enough to make me horny. But because it had been so long between nuts, dude, since I thought that, you know, I'd been edging since 2013, basically, getting new Mike Myers content. And now I'm seeing it. You expect when you see this, it's going to be so good, it's going to make you bust a whole load out. But I didn't quite get there. The load was minimal, little. Yes, I was satisfied enough. It was a little pitter-patter out there, but it was not a full horny load. So I'm going to say yes by a touch.
Okay, yes, by a hair.
Cameron, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
The question is, did this movie make you horny, baby?
Oh, you know, that's a tough one because I think if I was 15 years old, the answer would have been a straight up yes. I would have viewed this in the same way that you view Sin City. I would have been horny for the neon noir. I would have been horny for the twins. I would have been horny to see my hero playing a couple of characters there.
Yes.
If I was a 15-year-old boy, I would have been shooting ropes and spilling yogurt all over.
Some of the biggest loads you could imagine.
Yeah, and if I was a 15-year-old, like, girl from the 1950s and I had a hoop skirt on, who's to say what was going on under there?
Anyone can say but us. It's not for us to say what could happen.
But something undoubtedly would have been happening under that skirt, for sure.
Go on the Wikipedia page for 1950s teenagers and there might be some information in there somewhere about it.
Yeah. It might be like underneath like bobby sockets and rock and roll and like Elvis and Ed Sullivan.
Or watch like
show.
A season of Happy Days or some shit. Who knows? Maybe they go into detail
there.
Probably
in Happy Days. Explain it in Happy Days. Maybe Mork from Ork comes down and explains what happens or something.
Oh, look under that skirt. Very steamy.
So I think I'm going to have to say, while I was titillated and excited by Mike Myers' presence, I was not horny.
Wow. So this is a split decision. I'm going just horny and you're going just not horny.
It's split right down the middle, camel toe style, baby.
Which is something that we legally can't talk about, but, you know, it's a little image for you. It's an image for you. But this is one that splits a decision. You're saying, too, the only way you could possibly be horny for this, if it came out during possibly the most horny-filled time of your life as a teenage boy, where even the whirring hum of a computer turning on could elicit the idea of horniness within you. So that's the only way that this movie could make you horny is if that you're already horny nonstop.
That's true, yeah.
And I think, you know, these are just some not horny times. we're not living in horny times at the moment.
No. We're living in isolated times. And while it can be horny to be isolated, it isn't yet.
It's hornier to be titillated.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm glad we talked about this movie. I'm glad we finally watched it. But you know what I'm dreading is the next one that we have to watch.
Mm. And we are going to do it. Yep. We swore. It's been a long time. We swore that we would never do Bo-Rap because we didn't want to. We probably got upwards of like 100 messages going, when are you guys going to do Bo-Rap? When are you going to do Bo-Rap? We're not going to unwrap the bow, we said.
We didn't want to do it because, A, we didn't want to do it, and B, because the director of the film, I don't want to say too much about him, but if I had to compare him to any character from any movie, it would be Simon Pegg from Terminal.
Yes, exactly. We have it on good authority that the director of that film is a Simon Pegg from Terminal type. But he was fired. He was replaced by someone. If I had to compare them, who they would be?
Yeah.
They would be a Dexter Fletcher type from Terminal, because Dexter Fletcher, the actor, did direct the movie.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Dexter Fletcher. And so he's with Mike. Maybe Mike was the one that made the call.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe Mike said, hang on a tick. I've been working with this bloke in the UK.
Okay, Mike, why do you have the accent still?
Because he's between roles.
Oh, okay. Okay, good, good, good.
He's trying to figure out, am I the janitor? Am I the evil mastermind? Or am I the record guy from Bo-Rap, probably? So he's between roles right now. And he suggests Dexter Fletcher, and they say, let's give him a shot.
Yeah, give this boy a shot. Let him up, sit behind the camera. He's done a couple of good flicks already. We're going to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody soon. And who would have thought that Bohemian Rhapsody would lead to Oscar wins, nominations, become this humongous success after all the press, and it didn't seem interesting to me at all. And also Mike Myers and Dana Carvey popping up at the Oscars presenting the movie.
Crazy. And who would have thought that after all of that, like, buzz and hype, not a single person has talked about the movie since?
Only to say that Dexter Fletcher's next movie, the Elton John biopic, Rocket Man, is much better than Bohemian Rhapsody, but why is it not receiving the same attention that Bohemian Rhapsody has received?
I didn't know he made Rocket Man.
He did. He did, man.
All right, I'm going to have to check it out, man.
He did, man. Check it out, man. You'll love it, man. Cool, I watched it the other day, man. It was pretty cool, man.
Cool, man. That sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, man. So we love movies. We love talking about movies. We love Mike Myers. Do you still love Mike Myers?
Of course. Of course I do. I love him enough to watch Bo-Rap in the next couple of weeks. So I'm, that's how much I love him.
I felt a tremendous sense of joy seeing him on screen again, and an absolute unbridled sense of enthusiasm for when you and I decided that we were going to bring Mike Check back for a couple of flicks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. It's exciting times.
It's exciting.
So I think we should leave it here. I'm going to take my cap off. And I hope that you all join us on our next journey into the world of Bohemian Rhapsody.
I can't wait to watch 5 minutes of that movie that Mike Myers appears in. Guys, if you want to hear more from us, we've got another podcast. It's called Total Reboot, where we talk about reboots, remakes, and ripoffs in cinema. Currently, we have got a Stuck Indoors Film Festival going on where we're talking about Rear Window and the movies that ripped it off, like Disturbia, like the classic Australian film Road Games. We also have a Patreon where you can get access to more content from us, including a podcast called Total Respect, where we pick a famous beloved star like an Adam Sandler, like Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson, where we basically do like a little mini mic check about four of our favorite performances from them.
And you also get exclusive access to our private Facebook group, the Cinephile Registry, which is full of people just like you. People that love to laugh, people that love to yuck it up, people that love flicks, people that love films, and we all just talk shit all day. It's really fun.
It's really fun, especially at the moment where, you know, a lot of us are spending a lot more time at home in front of the computer. To be able to have like this nice, beautiful community around us has been so wonderful, to be sharing stuff about movies and some joy with everyone at the moment. It's been really, really wonderful. So thank you to all of you that support us, and especially a thank you to Joshua A. You upgraded your pay into Patreon, you are now at the Horny Baby tier at $6.90. So you are getting a shout out on today's episode, Josh. Thank you so much. You got so horny about new mic check that you became a true horny baby.
Thank you, Josh. You have made me so happy. You've made me feel so excited. And to show my respect to you, I'm going to tell you everything that happens underneath that skirt, that hoop
skirt. We're going to post what we understand happens underneath a hoop skirt in the Facebook group. So if you want to find out, and if you can't find it on Wikipedia, join the Facebook group where we're going to be talking about everything crazy that could possibly happen up a hoop skirt in the 1950s when fellas are doing the twist with their giant stiff penises, okay?
Thank you so much, Josh. Thank you so much, everyone. Talk to me on Instagram or Twitter at I Am Cameron James, and you are at This Is Alexi. Correct?
Yes, Bubba, that's correct. This is also at Mic Check Pod on Twitter. So tweet, fave, retweet the announcement of this episode so the horny babies can see that we are back and we are bad bitches.
Bye, babies.
It's Mic Check. It's Mic Check. The podcast. Bye.